do his own thing. Jack spent his next year being quite stingy as well, doing what Jack does.
And that was the sealed book. I hope you listened to it. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to Three Tune Tuesday on Blind Skeleton Radio. I am your host, Victor of Doom. Welcome and thank you for spending your lunch hour with me. One of the more common aspects of Halloween, at least in North America, is of course the carving of the jack-o'-lantern. Now, it takes a far second place, of course, to trick-or-treating for kids. But still, even to this day, well past my childhood, I like to carve jack-o'-lanterns. It's fun. It's something that I have done since the dawn of me, and I greatly enjoy it. Now, in North America, jack-o'-lanterns are just absolutely everywhere. I assume that they are semi-common in the United Kingdom and North America, and sorry, Western Europe, but they're everywhere here in North America, both Canada and the United States. No, by the time Halloween rolls around, it seems as if everyone has a lit jack-o'-lantern on their front stoop or somewhere near the front house to ward the spirits off. Now, despite the fact that jack-o'-lanterns are typically carved from pumpkin, which is native to North America, the jack-o'-lantern itself is an Irish phenomenon. It stems from Ireland. Now, the story goes that back in the day, an old Irishman by the name of Stingy Jack was doing what old Irishmen do, and he was being stingy and grumpy. And he happened to come upon the devil in a bar in a pub in Ireland, and the two got to chatting and joking and carrying on and drinking and drinking and drinking until it came time to pay up for the tab. Well, Jack was able to convince the devil himself to pay for the bar tab. The devil agreed, turned himself into a coin so Jack could pay. Well, Jack grabbed the coin and quickly pocketed it and put it beside a silver crucifix that he happened to have in his pocket, which prevented the devil from escaping the coin and going about to his own evil business. Well, the two had a chat after Jack walked out of the pub, and the devil agreed that he would not bother Jack for an entire year if he would just please, please, please let him free from the coin. Jack agreed, and the two went on their way. Well, a year later rolls by, and the devil comes to visit Jack to get his due. Now, and he meets up with Jack in the woods. You know, and Jack remembers the devil. I suppose that's something you don't really easily forget. And was prepared to go with the devil to do whatever he needed to do. He did, however, convince the devil that, you know, I do have an old shirt that's up in the top of this tree. If you could just please go get it for me. I'm too old to climb. It's my favorite shirt. I want to take it with me when we go. And the devil agreed and climbed the tree, to which Jack hastily pulled out his pocket knife and carved a crucifix into the tree trunk, thereby preventing the devil from escaping the tree and climbing down. Well, of course, the devil's yelling down from the tree. You know, and Jack agrees, yeah, I will let you down. I will cut down the crucifix if only you agree not to come bother me for the next 10 years. The devil agrees. Jack hacks up the crucifix, and they both go on their own way. Well, before the 10 years was up, you know, Jack, being old, finally succumbs to old age, you know, and his spirit begins to move on. Well, he was stingy in life, and he wasn't the nicest of persons, so heaven doesn't want him. He hasn't yet earned his way into heaven. So Jack goes down to hell to meet up with the devil, find a home. And the devil says, no, no, it's not been 10 years yet. You're not allowed in. And I really, frankly, don't want you here anyway. You're a jerk. So Jack's like, well, what am I supposed to do? I can't just wander the earth. It will be dark. So the devil says, here. And he scooped up some glowing embers from the pits of hell and tossed them at Jack. Now you've got this to light your way. Well, Jack grabbed a turnip. And he carved a hole in it, and he scooped the embers into it. And he used that as his lantern to light his way through the afterlife. And that is where the term Jack-o'-lantern, or Jack of the Lantern, comes from. Now, the Irish, of course, carved their jack-o'-lanterns into turnips and potatoes. That was what they had there at the time. When they came over to North America, they brought the custom with them. And discovered pumpkins, you know, and pumpkins are much larger than a turnip or a potato, and they're also much more easy to carve. You know, they're hollow on the inside once you carve out all the guts. And so pumpkins became the primary medium with which to sorry, a microphone here just crapped out on me, with which to carve out jack-o'-lanterns, and that's where they came from. Okay, so with that in mind, we're going to start off today's Three Tune Tuesday with a song on the Edison label. It's a foxtrot. It is performed by the Joutis Society Orchestra from the 19-teens somewhere. This is entitled Jack-o'-lantern. Thank you. And that was Jack-O-Lantern by the Jada Society Orchestra on the Edison label. Now, granted, that was not a scary, scary song. Nothing that Edison would have ever permitted on his label with his face on it would be scary or frightening. All meant to be happy-go-lucky. But definitely a fun take on the term Jack-O-Lantern. The mood of that song is entirely different from much of the darkness of Halloween and being the day of the dead, the day where things come to haunt us and scare us and do all sorts of nasty, mean things to us. It reminds me of a story I heard a while back about a haunted doll. Now, we often consider and view haunted dolls as being old, maybe porcelain Victoria-era dolls or something old that has some history behind them, and not necessarily something newer. Well, in this particular case, the doll happened to be an Elsa doll from the Disney movie Frozen. And the doll, like many other dolls, was battery powered. You squeeze it, you press a button, and it would sing a song. And this is, what Disney does. It's how they make a gazillion dollars. They sell dolls that do things, toys that do things, and everyone is happy with them. Well, this doll, at one point, started to randomly sing its song in Spanish instead of English, which it wasn't supposed to do. And then it would start to turn on and play the song on its own, even when it was not turned on. It would just start singing. And then it ceased to sing in English at all. It would only sing in Spanish. Of course, the family was put out by this. By no reason should the language have changed, and by no reason should the doll be singing if it isn't powered on. After 6 years, they had never changed the batteries, and it was still going strong in Spanish. So the family claims that at one point they decided to throw the doll out, and the next morning it appeared in their living room. No one in the house claimed that they moved the doll back from the trash into the house. In fact, everyone denied doing so. And this happened a second and a third time, and the family was getting rightfully spooked. So ultimately, they did what any family would do, and they sent the doll to a friend. They sent the doll across the country up north to Minnesota to a friend who taped the doll to the front of his pickup truck. And the family at that point did not hear anything else as to what may have befallen the doll. I like to think at that point the pickup truck that the doll was attached to became a pickup truck from hell, impervious to damage, and would set fire onto slow-moving vehicles or vehicles that were driving slow in the passing lane on the highway. It's kind of what I like to think. It does remind me of a story that did, in fact, happen to me a long, long time ago in a country far, far away that we call Canada. I remember lying in my bedroom one lazy Saturday morning. I was reading a book, and the stereo system that I had in my bedroom was turned off. Now, I turned it off because I didn't like the hum of the speakers when it was turned on, so I would always turn it off when I was not using it. And as I'm reading this book, the speakers began to hum, and then I began to hear some form of words coming from it, and it spooked me. It really spooked me. I must have been 12, maybe 13 years old at the time, and it spooked me. And I turned the stereo system on and then off again, and it stopped. And I am being a little spooked. I walked out to talk to my mom about it, and she explained that speakers are driven by magnets, and that there's a lot of reasons why a magnet might start vibrating and doing some strange things. Maybe there was a high-powered radio signal that came through, a low passing airplane with a strong radio, or any one of a number of other things that could have caused the magnets to start moving. Now, I accepted that. Still a little spooked about it. I remember not trusting that stereo quite again, and I seem to recall getting rid of it shortly after that, but that was my experience. If you've had, anyone here listening's had one of their own experiences with a doll or an item or just anything, you know, drop me a twit. I'm at @skeleton_1 on Twitter. I'd love to hear what you have to say about your spooky stories. So, moving on from spooky and haunted, we are moving on to our next song, our second song of three. This one is The Ghost of the Ukulele. The Ghost of the Ukulele was written in the 19-teens. This version by Elizabeth Bridge and Charles King was recorded in 1917 on the Columbia Blue label. Back at that time, there was a surge in popularity in Hawaiian music, and The Ghost of the Ukulele was one of the results of that surge in popularity. It was written to get people to enjoy the sound of the ukulele. And that was The Ghost of the Ukulele on the Columbia Blue Label by Elizabeth Bridge and Charles King. That was played with a light or soft needle on my portable Victrola VV35. Came across pretty nice, much nicer than having the heavy needle in that portable machine. Well, we're going to finish up today's show with another Halloween-inspired song. Circling back to jack-o'-lanterns, we're going to finish up with another lantern-themed song. This is Where the Lanterns Glow, also on the Columbia Blue Label from 1919. This is going to be played from my Columbia phonograph itself. This is performed by the Columbia Saxophone Sextet. The Columbia Saxophone Sextet was formed by Columbia in large part due to the growing popularity of saxophones in the early 20th century, brought out in large part by the success of the band Six Brown Brothers, which I have played previously. So here is Where the Lanterns Glow by the Columbia Saxophone Sextet.
Thank you. Thank you.